Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I am your host, Preston Schlankhofer, coming to you from the Strategic Command and Control Center deep within the Civil Defense Radio bunker. We have a great guest on the show today and one whom you will enjoy hearing from, Caleb Retzer. He's a graduate student, and I'll let him give you a little bit more of his background. But what we're going to be talking about is his research proposal for his research paper titled Local Level Electromagnetic Pulse Mitigation and Response Planning. So, Caleb, welcome back to Civil Defense Radio.
Hello, sir. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. It's been a while.
Yes, it has.
You know, you honor me with sending me this proposal that you're working on, and I read through it, and I really thought you were hitting on some good topics in there. And so let's, before we get into that, just remind the audience of who you are, you know, what you're studying at school, and what gave you this interest in preparedness and the topics that you're addressing in this research paper.
Well, my name is Caleb Retzer. I am a graduate student going to Adelphi University for a emergency management homeland security. I am currently in my last semester before getting my master's, so I'm pretty excited about that. Apart from that, I am currently working at a paper mill, so I'm more or less, you know, just taking it upon myself to expand not only academically working with this topic, but just trying to basically say, you know, I recognize a problem. What could we do in this huge vacuum that unfortunately the authorities have left us with to work if we're trying to mitigate this issue of in potentially EMP attack on the U.S.
Yeah, that's a big subject to tackle in a research paper. So I know it's not going to be a short paper.
No, essentially, you know, considering the avenues you kind of have to navigate as you go, one of the reasons why I also want to pursue this research is because there's not necessarily a blueprint available to conduct a research. We could say that there's literature on understanding the grid and hardening the grid, but as far as how local communities can respond instead of react to this sort of situation, there's not a whole lot out there. So the objective here is to more or less create a blueprint to where communities can then, you know, take the white paper and say, okay, this is how we can proceed with either planning or responding. Although if they attempt to start any kind of planning after an event is taking place, I'd say they're already in a tough spot. And unfortunately, that's what we're left with today. So my aim here is to provide more or less a blueprint to figure out what you can do instead of waiting until you already know what you can't.
What you're trying to do is do something that FEMA and the state and local emergency managers should be doing.
Yeah, I'm, you know, just a regular guy, no particular stake in, we'll say, the business of things, trying to, you know, step up where they should have been filling these shoes a long time ago.
Exactly. I believe so too. And that's one of the reasons why I've got involved in this subject of civil defense, trying to bring civil defense back to the local community, because it's a needed aspect for survival in especially this world that we live in now, because we've got natural and man-made hazards, and we don't have any plans for these. We've got, you know, this administration rattling sabers with Russia, trying to get into a shooting war with Russia, and, you know, it's good that we haven't yet in Ukraine, but it looks like there's other areas over there in formerly Eastern Bloc countries that there's some rattling going on over there as well. So we could actually face an EMP attack here without any real warning, and that's what a lot of people, I don't think, understand, that the EMP attack would be something that would be conducted without any prior warning, except seeing the missile going up and it's, you know, exploding if you were lucky enough to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're spot on with that. I believe a lot of people hold the misconception that the politics before a shooting war would be in your face and so massive that, you know, any type of situation could potentially be avoided, but that's not the case. All it takes is one small flashpoint for things to more or less spiral out of control. We have that in Ukraine, especially with the blockade of Kaliningrad.
Right.
In Lithuania, blocking that railway. You got North Korea saying that they're potentially going to be moving missiles to the border. You got the Chinese, you know, saber rattling over there, over Taiwan.
Yep.
All it takes is one miscalculation, one small event for things to really build up. And as you know, in those militaries, including Iran, it is in their military doctrine to utilize combined arms warfare in order to knock the West out of the fight before it even starts. And once they see the potential for that, they're going to act on that. And as you can relate through your own understanding, is that when we impose our view on potential adversaries, that's when we really screw up. Yeah. That's when we miss the intelligence. That's when we miss the warning signs. And that's when bad things happen.
Yeah. Well, I think under Obama, he was trying to start some stuff with Russia, but definitely under this current administration, he's doing some things that aren't really meant for our national security. Let's put it that way.
I agree.
Let's shift and get into this paper here. Now, on page one here, third paragraph, it says EMP response planning is appropriate for 21st century communities, risk assessment and hazard mitigation strategy for all levels of government. This topic is a new dimension of national security and has no precedent regarding long-term social disruption in the United States. An effective response will rely on the efforts of local communities. That is correct. The dynamics of today's international environment within an adversarial context regarding both state actors and terrorism reflect the growing need for communities to possess an evolving recognition and understanding of this hazard spectrum. You know, you're so right. And ultimately, it is the local governments who have to carry the brunt of anything that happens. You know, even a natural disaster, it's the local communities that take the brunt. You know, it's the state and the feds that come in later on and help out, but it's the local. It's you and me in our communities that take the brunt of the response, the mitigation, and the preparedness aspect. So, and recovery, you know, so there's four phases, and I got them mixed up there. I didn't do them in order, but, you know, this paper that you're working on, this, I think, begins to make people think about that first phase of that, which is preparation.
Correct. I guess an easy way to put it is things have been good in the U.S. The access to resources, to life-sustaining services, to quality of life, in a lot of ways, you can say, have made people drop their guard. Those assets in our infrastructure, a lot of people don't consider that to be the soft underbelly of the United States. Brainstorming and understanding that that is how you can essentially bring the U.S. down through those avenues that will disrupt that infrastructure, I think, as you can attest to, people have a hard time trying to believe that. It's always the case that that can't happen.
Yes. Oh, that'll never happen. Or we're too mighty. Nobody's gonna attack us. Well, with the combined arms, anything goes mentality of our potential adversaries, which you've named them already, their military strategy is first strike if they think they can win.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be sending an ICBM from Russia or China or North Korea or even Iran. It's going to be up close. It's going to be something so fast that we won't have an opportunity to respond. And they might even do it in a way that we don't have the capability of knowing exactly who did it until much later.
Nah, if they're lucky enough, as you know, port security in the United States is, you know, a little touchy.
Yeah, to say the least.
They wouldn't, if they were really committed to the idea of perpetrating an attack like this, they wouldn't even need to launch on foreign soil. But
exactly.
The nature of the topic that we're discussing, as I stated, it's a new dimension of national security as far as a policy standpoint. The Pentagon has known about this for decades, right? But your average person and those within your local governments, they haven't really had a reason to think about this. And they more or less leave the international politics, the context of the international environment, to those at the federal level. So they don't really understand the context that this could take place. They don't understand or even feel the need to understand the military doctrines that constitute the consequences of, we'll say, bad relations. So there's a lull in expanding the awareness of local elected officials to want to do something about it, to want to understand it. And that leaves communities extremely vulnerable to these events. And how do you reach those people without more or less compromising the status quo? If you try to go through the elected officials, as you know, a lot of times they'll basically state that you have an ulterior motive and the conversation ends there. It's a very tough situation to navigate, especially if you are a concerned citizen and you want to see something happen. You hear nothing. You get crickets. You bring up this point that, you know, local meetings or anything, and they either look at you like you're not wrapped too tight, or they say, oh, it's not an issue. The federal government would never let that happen. So what I wanted to do was pursue something using qualitative data to where basically give more ammo to their arsenal if they want to approach their sheriff or elected officials about doing something about this, have something in hand or a specific direction for their thought process to go to them and say, this is a real possibility. Here's something that maybe we could use to mitigate the effects in case it does happen. Not saying it's going to happen, but just in case, here's something to refer to. And while I was writing this, I kept in mind basically 3 points, my desired end state overall. And that is to ensure community continuity in the absence of federal and state authority, to utilize any and all means to develop sustainable action towards life preservation and to secure the security of county jurisdiction and execute additional provisional authority, which in the language itself, I think gears the discussion that you can have with your elected officials over the dimensions that you need to cover in order to begin the process of effective planning.
No, that's good. That's good. This is something that we've been looking for with the AMP task force. My guide that I wrote, which you can find on civildefenseradio.com/resources, right at the top of the page. It kind of addresses this in a way in order to get the conversation started and talk about stuff. And then my website has the threats there, which it's a really good resource for that. I was a little short-sighted on pandemic issues, but I still have to correct that. But the threats page on the website has some good information, and then inside the resources there are other documents there that are good information as well. If anybody's looking for some confirmation about what we're talking about, but Caleb, this paper is it makes people think just on this what is it, 22 pages, 23 pages to for your proposal, it gets the brain moving in that direction, I think. And I'm glad that you had a chance to write this and going this direction. I think your paper will have a lot of the concepts and information that we in the local communities are going to need. Now, on page 2, I read through this thing, and I always read with a pen and a highlighter, and so I marked up this document here. But on page 2, there's a couple paragraphs here that I really liked as well as that prior one. And this one goes on to say, an analysis of federal reports shows that the general commitment of focus is toward private sector and federal agencies, not local level or state level governments. There is a mention of local governments in federal documents, though pertaining to testing more resilient critical infrastructure. Concrete response guidelines are not available. This may be due to the relative new nature of the threat. Personally, I kind of doubt that. though the phenomenon of an electromagnetic pulse, or EMP, was discovered decades ago, it has not been thought of as a significant threat to be used by a state or non-state actor until recent years. Federal studies have not addressed the information gaps at the community level, but rather have plans to notify and work with industry leaders in our national infrastructure. They totally bypass the locals and go straight to the federal agencies and the big moneyed contractors and nonprofits. Yeah. That's who FEMA works with.
Yep.
The Red Cross and some of these other organizations that help out during disasters. They're not thinking about a military disaster. They're thinking about a natural disaster.
Correct.
And we don't even have to worry about necessarily plan for a military disaster, because we have the sun that is a potential disaster as well, with a coronal mass ejection, otherwise known as a solar flare, that could wipe out our grid.
Oh, absolutely. And
could do that very quickly with, like 72 hours of warning.
Yeah, and I think it's rather ominous that we're having this discussion today, because within the past few days, the European Space Agency even announced, hey, there was a sunspot facing the Earth that erupted not that long ago. I believe it was 24 hours. And right as it erupted, some of their observation equipment went down. So they can't tell us whether it's heading towards us or not.
Yeah,
that's completely irrelevant and can also be brought into the discussion that I am trying to address with my thesis. Granted, yes, it is titled EMP mitigation, but as you stated, they had the same effect. And it could easily, sunspot erupts, massive CME heading towards Earth, whether it's M class or X class, based on the nature of our infrastructure and the technology that we utilize, it's going to cause disruption either way. And especially as Texas showed us, the possibility of cascading events is very high. And that's something that we don't have control over, whether from a political standpoint or not. You can't negotiate with the sun.
No, you can't.
So we're kind of at, you know, at the mercy of our own thought process towards preserving what we've built. And I it's almost bonkers to me, going back to the paragraph that you cited, especially in the realm of science and studying the sun, that we're not addressing this further. And essentially what the federal government in a lot of ways has revealed to us is that they're basically going to spend millions of dollars trying to figure out what they already don't know. They know what they don't know, but they're just doubling down on figuring out what they don't know. It doesn't make sense to me, and I'm sure it doesn't make sense to a lot of people, and it kind of leaves you feeling like you're left out to dry.
Yeah, it's sad. We've got multi-million dollar satellites up there that give us information on what's going on with the sun. They take pictures of the sun, video of the sun, and we can see the sun rotate and see these spots come into view that are notorious for throwing stuff out. We have some that are off to the side that sees activity that goes on before or after it gets, you know, to a threat level for us. And then, you know, we can measure the speed at which it's coming. We can understand better what is going on. We've got a whole space agency that's dedicated to that. And crickets from people who are supposed to be in the business of protecting this nation. I'm not talking about the military. I'm talking about the government administrations and the, you know, Congress and people who sit in the presidency. It's their job to protect us. And they're totally leaving this level of threat, which is even more damaging to us than a nuclear strike would be. A nuclear strike would be devastating, yes, but nothing compared to what an EMP would do and you know, take it down one notch, a coronal mass ejection, because a coronal mass ejection doesn't wipe out your cell phone like an EMP would. It just fries everything that's plugged into the net, into the grid. So that's, you know, I mean, houses could burn, buildings would catch on fire from the heat of the static electricity that's running through there so quickly that even power surge devices cannot catch it in time, because it just goes so fast. It's like the flash going through, you know, somebody's arms. You can't hold him back. And so that's an example of what we would face. And, you know, we had the EMP commission talking about this to the government for 17 years. 17 years they've known about this and have been warned about this. And Dr. Pry has been talking about this ever since the EMP commission was finally shut down in 20 or 21. I can't remember. But
and yet here we still are without even taking a foot in the right direction all them years later.
Yeah. Now, you do have a couple references that you talk about in here, and we're running out of time, so we won't have a lot of time to do that. But I already mentioned Dr. Pry as one of them. But can you give us a quick 2 minutes on the other reference that you put in here? And I'm trying to find his name. It's a little more difficult to pronounce. It's Mr. Sikotas. Yeah.
Yes.
Can you give us a little idea of what he has to say?
Well, essentially, the author, he goes through the importance of our life-sustaining infrastructure. I chose that reference because it gave a emphasis on essentially what keeps our society going. It's entitled Requirements for a Functional Society. And Sikotas, he breaks down the key factors that essentially explains what makes modern society work. And he actually references the threat of a CME to emphasize his point. And as we've just discussed, those factors can be easily translatable to the threat of an EMP. And I wanted to include that reference because it would give the readers an idea of the vulnerability that our society faces. You know, you think about modern Western society, you think of this complicated network of complex mechanisms. It's almost at times kind of tough to wrap your brain around. But what the author does is he basically breaks it down into these key elements, and you could take these key elements and take any of them away, they're going to cause issues.
Yeah.
And what we're talking about today essentially wipes them all out at once. CME, EMP, it doesn't really matter at that point because they're all tied into the same sustainment systems,
yeah.
Electricity. And I think he gives very appropriate context as to how each facet plays in, from power, water, sanitation, transportation, fuel, etc. He lays it all out on the table, and that's what I really appreciated about his work. I wanted to throw that in because it gave a clear and concise view of what exactly it is that we're talking about that's at stake.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Good. Well, Caleb, it was great having you on the show. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us, as we just discussed. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem, to poke the bear of our local elected officials, get them people off their rear ends, and do something. To be resilient takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. If something happens, it's too late. Disasters are come-as-you-are events. If you're not ready, you ain't ready, and you're going to suffer. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. I'd like to thank our guest, Caleb Retzett, for being on the show. And again, I'd like to thank you, our friends and listeners who are with us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.